Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder, and I know it's no surprise that we'll be talking about the Billy Meier case today, particularly the Might of Thoughts, still plugging away in that book after many years. Still amazed at how it gives me new information and important information all the time. So I'm going to share some of that with you this afternoon. Edward Albert Meyer is an 80-year-old man. He lives in a tiny mountain village in Switzerland called Hinterschmidruti, about 45 minutes east of Zurich. He's a very prolific author. He's written 40 books. One of these books is called The Might of Thoughts. It was originally written in German, as all of his books are, and then they're translated by various people around the world who are extremely gifted and dedicated, and hats off to them for this incredible hard work that they've done. The extension of their translation work, I guess, is the stuff that I do, which is try to pull out this information and make it a little easier for people to digest. If you'd like to order this book, you can go to Michael Horn's website, theyfly.com, and that's probably the easiest way. You can also go to the FIGU websites, and there's a procedure you have to follow, and I've never actually done that yet, so I won't talk about that much more than that. But I'm probably going to have to go that route eventually and maybe even someday get involved in the translation to a degree. But I just have a lot of other things that I'm currently working on right now. The Might of Thoughts. I want to talk, first of all, about how a gloomy attitude can chase away prosperity. One of the things that we're called to do in this information is to maintain an optimistic point of view. And if you consciously steer your life according to your innermost creational nature, you'll probably be optimistic. In order to be great, your consciousness, as well as your ideas, your thoughts and feelings, and all of those, you must not be submissive. And so being submissive can sometimes leave us into a gloomy attitude. And a gloomy attitude will chase away abundance and prosperity. And it's your duty to enjoy the abundance of life. And it's important to know that you do have an abundance. And abundance is an extremely plentiful or oversufficient quantity or supply. So being gloomy means that you're feeling distressed or pessimistic. And that will actually make it less likely for you to have prosperity. So what we're searching for and what we're focusing on is the evolution of our consciousness. That's the whole purpose for us being here. And the protection that we're hoping for is total control over the inner nature. And the only protection from that which is bad and negative and negating is total control over the inner nature. We have two competing inner natures, so to speak. And we have an innermost creational nature and kind of a false self or an errat self, it's sometimes called in the Meyer information. And that's the part of ourself that we want to steer away from. In other words, let me read it here. It's on page 288 from the Might of Thoughts. It is also certain that whoever has built up his or her inner nature with the impulses of the innermost creational nature has caused it to blossom and can love himself in all honesty and deference without falling into negative bad states. So we have the innermost creational nature, which is sending us out impulses, and it'll actually impulse the inner nature. The inner nature you can think of as the false self. And if the inner nature responds to these impulses, it becomes more flexible and healthier. And one of these ideas is called self-respect. And you have to learn to like yourself and respect yourself. And if you do, then it helps you to steer away from unsatisfaction. And you should never let yourself fall into unsatisfaction, because that can lead you into being inactive. And inactivity is what stagnates our evolution. So enthusiasm is really a super thing to have, and you need to focus on enthusiasm, because enthusiasm, it really, really works wonders in your life. Let me read a few what the book here has to say about this. In the life of the human being, enthusiasm for knowledge, truth, wisdom, and evolution can work wonders. As the saying goes, enthusiasm is like a magic spell which is able to newly form one's entire human existence. And I'm experiencing a little of this right now, and it's related to playing music. And I got a couple of guys that I've been, a bass player and a flute player that I've been meeting with. And a lot of times I'll visualize us playing together, where I'll visualize myself playing alone, and I visualize and create this enthusiasm for music, and I think very optimistic thoughts, and I'm very confident about our ability to put this music forth. And you can apply this to anything, to working in your garden. Imagine yourself working in your garden and producing just an abundance of beautiful plants. So this pictorial imagination produces something called a consciousness picture, which drives thoughts to this new activity. And it drives enthusiasm to this new activity. So the achievement of enthusiasm, which can be seen in the evolutive sense, means a complete re-education. So this is one of the amazing things of enthusiasm, is you literally start to re-educate yourself, and this is something I'm just now starting to experience. And again, Billy talks about these wish ideas. This is on page 322 of The Might of Thoughts. Such a value only arises through the manifestation of wish ideas and wish imaginations, which are capable of manifesting and can thereby be realized by the might of the thoughts, when the might of the thoughts is sufficiently strengthened by means of the necessary enthusiasm. And the human being who lives with this enthusiasm feels raised to new heights all the time. It's really a wonderful thing. I'm going to try to pronounce the German word for enthusiasm. I haven't listened to this in a while. It's Begeisterung. And enthusiasm means an intense, eager enjoyment and interest or approval. As I mentioned yesterday, in Latin, ethos, which is the word for enthusiasm, means having a God within. Enthusiasm originates from the Greek meaning possessed by a God's essence and applied to the Greeks' manifestations of divine possession. So, and this is related to also to the idea of artistic inspiration. And in the Latin, this means to inspire or breathe into. This refers to an unconscious burst of creativity and an artistic endeavor. So inspiration is the process of being mentally stimulated to do or feel something, especially to be creative. And enthusiasm, all righteous evolutive enthusiasm, gives the life an unexpected power. And it's really cool. It's really amazing. And this will be when you start to experience the might of the thoughts. And this unexpected power enables the human being to lead a life where you start to see success in all areas. And again, you'll feel raised to new evolutive heights moment by moment. So you should nurture your enthusiasm. And again, visualize yourself, create a pictorial imagination, create a consciousness picture of you doing something and being very successful at it, whether it's work, whether it's a hobby. And hobbies, if you get successful, it's really interesting. They tend to turn into another vocation, a parallel vocation. So create a pictorial imagination, produce a consciousness picture, and then generate thoughts into this activity and be very enthusiastic and be very confident and very optimistic. And this is the way you're prepping your success. The pictorial imagination, it's a pure consciousness picture, which is fluidly constructed like an apparition. And it works at first like a pictorial haze, recognizable for the consciousness and the subconsciousness, but it's not tangible yet. It's kind of murky. It's just forming. However, as your imagination generates this power, the consciousness picture can become very distinct and very well defined. And when you have this very clear definition in your consciousness picture, these clear definitions will generate your enthusiasm. Enthusiasm will relieve self-torment. It gives your life an unexpected power and success. And this is part of the creational law of prosperity. This is, I don't know if I want to get into this too much because it's a little distracting. We talked about it yesterday, but this law of prosperity and abundance is a law. It's a creational natural law. But when you live on a planet that has nearly 9 billion people in it, it interferes with this law of abundance and prosperity, and it short circuits it. If you live a life where you're not striving enough, you're going to short circuit the law of abundance and prosperity. If you live a life where you're not living in the law of harmony, then, which means you're not having neutral positive thinking, that's going to undermine the law of abundance and prosperity in your life. If you live a life where you don't practice any kind of love for your fellow man, your environment, for animals, if you have no love, and I mean non-romantic love, I'm talking about a love which is based on respect and reverence and understanding you're really in everything around you. We're all one, so to speak. If you have no love in your life, then abundance and prosperity, just like if you're gloomy, abundance and prosperity is going to be chased away. So it's all a battle of the thoughts. It's all trying to stay in harmony, to stay optimistic. And if you have harmony in your consciousness and thoughts, as well as your life and work, it will all flow like a stream, which is pleasant for the human being. And again, a harmony is the combination of these simultaneously sounded musical notes, which produce an agreement that fit together. So a concord. So the term harmony is related to the Greek harmonia, which means a joint agreement to fit together, to join. And you should listen to harmonious music. It's a huge benefit for your consciousness. So anyway, that was what I wanted to talk about in terms of the might of the thoughts and enthusiasm. Now, I usually spend a little time in the show to talk about reincarnation and creation. You have reincarnated. You may not know it. You've reincarnated many, many times on Earth, unless you're a brand new spirit form. And if you're a brand new spirit form, I doubt you'd be listening to this show, but you might. I mean, it's possible. So we reincarnate, which means our spirit form re-enters into a human body. So we have all, most all of us have been through the death and life cycle many, many times. One of the great advantages is that the law of forgetting allows us to forget those things. Because really the purpose of all of these reincarnations is the evolution of your consciousness, which means you're going to get wiser with each one of these experiences. Now, in your subconscious mind are programmed your evolutive levels from your previous lifetimes. And these evolutive levels will impulse you to evolve, will impulse you to do certain things which will help your evolution. Now, we all have something called the spirit form, and the spirit form lives in the center of our middle brain in an area called the superior colliculus. And the spirit form is a fragment of the universal consciousness. It is completely neutral. Your spirit form cannot be disturbed. It cannot be harmed in any way. If you're a typical Earth human, your spirit form is about 4 million years old. It has been recording your lifetimes for the past 4 million years. And in the spirit realm, which is like an energy band around the planet, which your consciousness goes into with your spirit form after death, the spirit form leaves the body, the consciousness leaves the body, and it goes into this otherworldly realm. And the material consciousness, which is your subconscious, your unconscious, your conscious mind, your personality, that goes into something called the overall consciousness block. Every spirit form creates an overall consciousness block where the previous life memories are processed in between lifetimes. And those previous life memories are distilled down into their evolutive essence. So all your thinking, whether it's love, wisdom, assiduousness, meticulousness, logic, reasonableness, hope, optimism, cheerfulness, confidence, all these things are distilled down into their evolutive values. And they're stored in the spirit form. They're also programmed into the subconscious mind, the new subconscious mind. Because remember, the spirit form will create a new conscious mind, a new unconscious, a new subconscious. And the previous consciousness is distilled down into its neutral positive essence, is absorbed by the spirit form. All the events of your lifetime are stored in the what are called the storage banks. And there are storage banks for the universe, for the planet that you live on, for the solar system that you reside in, for the galaxy that you reside in. So none of this information is lost. It's stored in these storage banks. And I always talk about the experience that Billy had as a young boy of about 4 years old, where he starts getting all these impulses, boom, 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 from the storage banks. And he, at 4 years old, he has thoughts and realizations that a lot of us are still working on trying to get up to his level where he was at 4 years old. I think we are still, most of us still trying to understand all the things that he understood in almost that instant night when he in 1941 looked up at a starry sky and realized what all those impulses were all about. So we live many, many lifetimes. There are 7 evolutive steps that all societies go through, and they start out with primitive level. You go into a rational level. You go into the third stage, which is intelligent life. Now, somewhere we here on Earth are between stages 2 and 3. We have about 9 billion people on the planet. I would say, this is totally a guesstimate on my part, 6 billion people may be in rationality, hopefully. That's a big hope. I mean, and there's probably still people in the primitive state. And there are people moving into the intelligence area. So we should probably all be in the intelligence area by now. We're kind of a planet that has disclosure too early, let's say. And I'm not joking when I say that, because I think what our Old Testament is really talking about is not the creator of the universe, but the Elohim, which were other people who were on the earth, like Jehovah, who was one of them, who interfered with our evolution at a very, very early stage, and it scarred our psyches. So we have the major religions on the earth, which is Christianity, Islam, and maybe Judaism. And I think they could be variations on what you might call a cargo cult. Because in the early 1930s and into the 40s, in the Pacific Islands, northwest or northeast of Australia, and particularly an area called Vanuatu, and particularly on an island of Tana, developed these cargo cults where these native people would start to worship these servicemen from the U.S. who came from the sky in airplanes or on giant ships, and they built for themselves runways, and they create little model planes, which aren't model, which are actually normal size. And they wait to this day, 2017, they wait for their gods to come back from the sky. And they worship an individual named John Frum, an example of the Frum cargo cult. So I'm afraid that our religions may be a cargo cult. It's very, very possible. But really, the creational natural laws tell us that there is a law of reincarnation. And the reason we have to reincarnate is it takes many lifetimes to evolve the consciousness. And what is happening is there is a universal consciousness. Schöpfung is the German word for creation. And we live in the material manifestation of the wisdom of this universal consciousness. And the material manifestation of the wisdom of the universal consciousness is the material universe that we live in. And the material universe is only one belt of seven belts of creation which counter-rotate against each other. So all the planets, the stars, the galaxies, the solar systems are embedded within this fourth layer of our universe. And what happens is spiritual energy comes out of these other layers, is compressed into matter. And the matter forms into planets and stars and galaxies and solar systems and oceans and land. And spirit forms come out of the creational spiritual realm and are placed into plants, first of all, and plants form on a planet. And then the plants prepare the way for the next stage of growth, which is animals. And spirit forms are put in animals. On Earth, I believe the first mammal was called Adelospatialis cromtoni, a tiny little mammal about 2 inches long or so, discovered somewhere in the Southwest by a paleontologist. Well, that would be the first mammal that had a spirit form enter it. So what happens is that this slow growth, when a planet is slowly populated with life, spirit forms come out of the creational realm, out of this energy band around the planet, this other dimension, and plants grow, and then slowly tiny little animals will form, and insects also form, which I see them as tiny little animals, so to speak. And all of these creatures have a spirit form, some level of consciousness, maybe very slight, but some level of consciousness. And these spirit forms evolve as well, the animals and the plants. For example, plants evolve on an impulse evolution. But this is what are called the creational natural laws operating. This is the way the universe works. Well, eventually, after millions and millions of years, something called primary beings come into existence, which are not apes, but are primates. And the primate, a certain primate on the Earth, started developing a different kind of awareness, rather than an instinctual awareness, started to develop a consciousness which could evolve to higher levels. This started about 9 to 12 million years ago on the Earth, according to Meyer information. And this was Homo sapiens sapiens, and started to develop this consciousness which allowed it to think and allowed it to use an imagination. And it started to live under the law of striving. Everything, in fact, lives under the law of striving. But for the primary beings, it's a little different because we have to strive. I mean, and all animals strive in their consciousness to a degree, but more so the primary beings, and I'm talking about what eventually becomes Homo sapiens sapiens, or human beings. And this is the same pattern that occurs on every planet and every solar system that has life and is in the right place for life to occur. This same process of evolution and process of reincarnation, and they kind of all work together in this way. Boy, that's a very, very quick overview of the creation and reincarnation, and we'll definitely come back to this. I wanted to again move a little to current events, and I'll play a clip here if I can find it. The Meyer information has very many prophecies related to it, and some of these prophecies deal with potential future events here in the world, in the entire world, and particularly in the United States. And the Meyer material says it's very possible that we could start to see civil war in the United States by about 2020. So I'll play a little bit of this clip and a little bit of another clip, and we'll talk a little bit about this potential civil war, which I think we're going to avoid. Billy says no. Billy says it's definitely coming. I say we can stop it through the might of our own thoughts. So let's listen.
We're going to lose the whole country to a bunch of bloodthirsty communists and pedophiles if we don't back the president. Ladies and gentlemen, I've got intel here that I've not been allowed to tell you, but there is a civil war going on in the government right now. Even having commercials right now, you know, we have a new Iraq war for like a week, they don't have ads on radio. Or when 9/11 happened for about a week, there were no ads on radio. I don't have words to describe to you how much trouble this country's in. The Democratic Party has been working for the communist Chinese for at least 20 years. Because, see, once they took money from the Chinese, they all got compromised. And now a lot of the Republican leaders are working for them. And I have a lot of intel I'm not allowed to share with you that's directly from the president.
Okay, so we have corruption in our government. There are foreign forces like Saudi Arabia and the communist Chinese, which are definitely influencing our government right now in various ways. I believe our CIA, NSA has completely been taken over. It's been putting out such false information for months now, since the election. And I think even Trump is heavily influenced by either Saudi Arabia or Israel. I can't tell which, because he's falling into right in line with things that don't make any sense, like sending those cruise missiles over to Syria and bombing that airport. And now some of our planes have shot down Syrian planes. It's really disturbing. Here's Colonel Schaefer, who is going to talk about a potential civil war coming to the United States. Hopefully this will play. There we go.
So I want to ask Colonel Schaefer, former head of the Bin Laden unit, patriot, with a lot of big connections, helped expose Benghazi, you name it, works with the London Center for Foreign Policy Research, Fox contributor, where we are currently and how serious the situation is. But first, here's a clip of Sean Hannity Tuesday. They're calling for him to be fired right now at the Washington Post.
Also tonight, a soft coup is underway right here in the United States of America in an attempt to overturn November's election results and forcibly remove a duly elected president from office. Sinister forces quickly aligning in what is becoming now, in my mind, a clear and present danger. That is tonight's very important opening monologue.
All right, boom. Then a 15-minute breakdown of them saying kill the president, the deep state, Schumer bragging, the intelligence community has seven ways to Sunday to take you down. Then they come out in the Washington Post article and say Fox News Sean Hannity is encroaching on Alex Jones' territory because he quotes the same statements they've made about the plan to overthrow him. So they want to get this plan going, but then they want to deny it, even though it's in the news, when we oppose it. That is what they call black propaganda. They are using serious, unprecedented disinfo. Colonel Schaefer, you're more of an expert on this than even I am. I know that you've worked in some of the most classified areas there are and really head up a lot of things that I'll never see the light of day for this country. Am I overestimating how serious this is?
No, Alex, thank you for having me on. And no, you're laying it out completely correctly. You're essentially outlining the situation based on their own verbiage. And, of course, then when they get caught in the open daylight, they then try to say, no, we never said that. It's all about you. same way the deep state goes about saying the deep state doesn't exist. And as you pointed out, and this is the first time you and I have spoken since what? I don't know how many months ago. Sean Hannity and I haven't spoken. This is all original work by all of us simply observing what we see and factually analyzing and putting it back out. And my analysis is just a bit different than yours and Sean's. Mine is coming from the perspective of how I've looked at and studied terror organizations and how they go about radicalizing individuals. And my posit on this, Alex, and I've gotten some pushback and people don't like what I say, but the fact is this. The way that the left is going about trying to demonize the president, essentially justify and ignore the violence on their side, and then reinforce that with a complete the imagery of death being acceptable, Kathy Griffith using the beheaded image of the president. All these things are the same way ISIS goes about radicalizing and recruiting people to become terrorists. And
wow.
That is.
So we're seeing some very strange things in the press right now. And Contact Report 544, year 2010 is the possible collapse of the United States. And Billy was, when he was on the great trip in 1975 with the great spacership, he got this information from the Pleiar and extraterrestrials, who told him that the probability calculation is that the superpower USA could come to an end after 2020 if nothing in this country changes for the better. I'm saying it has changed for the better. We're going to avoid this. But Billy is saying no. Billy is saying we're going to have two civil wars in the U.S. and it's unavoidable at this point, he says. Now, again, I am going to say that it's not going to happen. I'm going out on the limb of optimistic, confident thinking and saying we're going to avoid this. And in many ways, I think we're going to avoid it because most Americans are too indifferent. They're so focused on their own lives, they don't even pay attention to what's going on around them. So this is a really two-edged sword here. The mainstream media has trained people in the United States to focus on things like sports and other things, and they're not really that aware of what's going on around them. Anyway, we have enormous contradictions with regards to politics, the economy, military things. We do have a tremendous decline of our culture. This concerns me more than anything. We also have climbing religion and sectarianism, various criminal activities. We have felonies of presidents. We have issues with national debt. We have a whole lot of things that are occurring right now, but we have a really dedicated small number of people in the U.S. which are working very hard right now. And some of them are studying the Meyer material, and they're passing it on. And I think we have the possibility to avoid this very challenging difficulty that's coming our way. Let me also play some U.S. soldiers who are speaking out about potential civil war.
This is the United States of America. Why are you hurting people? If you want to go kill and hurt people, go to Iraq.
Why y'all doing this to people? Right. Y'all walk around in riot gear like this is a war.
I saw them beating people that had nothing to do with anything, just grabbing people out of the crowd. There's no honor in that. My mom, my father, everybody has served in Iraq, Afghanistan. Well, I did 14 months in Iraq. My father was in Afghanistan. My mother did a year in Iraq. We fought for this country. I don't come home. I'm in New York City. I am from New York City. And these cops are hurting people that I fought to protect. There's no reason for this. There's no honor in hurting unarmed civilians. And I won't let it happen. Have a good night.
Yeah! I served with Kilo Company, 3rd Battalion, 8th Marines as an automatic machine gunner. There's a term, once a Marine, always a Marine. But there's also the term, eat the apple, F the core. I don't work for you no more.
What sort of training did you have as a Marine? I mean, were you given cultural awareness?
This Republican-Democrat thing, all the world is a stage. Obama is a puppet. He reads the script. He's a teleprompter reader. That's his official job. He doesn't make any decisions. The powers that be that have the majority of power in this world are those that control the financial system. The financial crisis, engineered by these same criminals who are the ultimate fraudsters of the world. The Federal Reserve, the European Central Bank, those are the real string pullers. That's real power. War is out of control, and those who are destroying this world by the fraud and deception is what's out of control. 9/11 was the false flag operation used to justify the invasion of Afghanistan. It is the ultimate deception, and it's done for a full spectrum dominance agenda, which is part of controlling this world by deception. And unless we as people stand up to these treasonous traitors and all of those people carrying out this stuff and the colluders, including the mass media and the politicians, we are going to continue to get this kind of deception.
The individual is handicapped.
I'm going to play another clip here, and this is from Dr. Michael Savage, who's been talking. He wrote a book about this potential civil war. Well, let's hear what he has to say. He's talking to Alex Jones in this next clip.
Alex, the thing is this. We've been penetrated. We've been infiltrated. How high up it goes is anyone's guess. We know that the president's middle name is not Jesus. We know that the military has been told to stand down. We know the police have been told to stand down. We know that there's only one sacred religion in the United States of America, and it isn't the founding religion. It's the invasive religion. And the fact of the matter is, the FBI director who warned us 6 weeks ago, this was just before Hussein's conference, anti-terrorism, counter-terrorism conference in Washington, where he invited Muslim groups. He disinvited the head of the FBI, who said that ISIS is in 49 out of the 50 states. Why would he do that to the head of the FBI who warned us? There's only one answer. Someone in that team in the White House is playing for the other side. They're not on our side. Now, of course, the good news here, Alex, is when I saw this terrible event last night, the good news is the beefy Texas cops killed the scum. They wiped the scum off the planet and sent them to heaven where they can go rape babies. I guess that's their reward. They get to rape 72 babies in the next world. What a religion. Isn't that great? Kill someone on this planet so you can rape 72 infants in the next world. Doesn't CNN find that obscene and pornographic and sickening? What can I say to you that you don't already know?
And here's Dr. Michael Savage on another program talking to Alex Jones as well.
Got a break. The police are super awake despite all their problems. The country's disintegrating. I mean, you know, what do you expect? The military, from what I've seen, is super awake to what's going on. Doesn't that give the socialists, the globalists, a problem? Isn't that their Achilles heel?
No, because Obama gutted all of the combat veterans who could have led a movement against an illegitimate government. He started it right after Benghazi. I named them in my last book. One general after the other was purged like Stalin purged them, only instead of shooting them, first they smeared the generals. He got drunk in Moscow. You hear this? He got drunk in Moscow, so they fired the chief of our nuclear arsenal, the man who knew how to run the nuclear system. He was fired for getting drunk in Moscow. Another one was found with a gambling chip in his trousers after going gambling. I mean, if that was the score here, they would have all quit. I guarantee they've done more than get drunk and go gambling. So, no, they're gone. The police have been deballed by this illegitimate, racist administration. Holder has deballed the police. Look what they've done in various cities, using the pretext of racism, all lies, to deball the police. So, yeah, the police are there. They're brave and they're armed. The military is there. They're brave and they're armed. But who's going to lead them? Without a Napoleon, where do the troops go?
Well, that's another point. That's why George Soros got caught, as you know, openly trying to fund the white instigators they send in to chant, you know, kill the pigs and all this, and then they get away.
Yeah, George Soros is behind a lot of this. And people are fanning the flames, and maybe even Alex Jones is fanning the flames of this potential civil war. So let's just keep watching this. It's a thing we've been watching for a while. Let's remain neutral about it all, neutral, positive, and let's talk a little bit about history and a little bit about Earth history in the closing 15 minutes of the show, because Some of our human ancestors came from Lyra Vega. And Billy's second contact person, Askett, he met with the first time, I believe, in 1953 when he went up to this top of this hill near his home. And I think he was living in Niederflux still at that time near Bulach, Switzerland. And out of the sky came this robotic craft which landed on top of the hill and pulled Billy into the ship as if by ghostly hands. And he flew off to the Great Pyramid of Giza. And it's a long story. I won't cover it now. But him and Askett saw a group of extraterrestrials under the Great Pyramid of Giza who had been manipulating the people of the Earth using technology and religion. Askett's people are known as the Timmers. They now reside in a parallel universe to ours, but their ancestors are the same as ours. And many of us here, not all of us, but many of us have ancestors who came from the constellation of Lyra near the Ring Nebula. Now, to complicate all this, there are different space-time configurations, and there are seven different space-time configurations in the material part of our universe. And this particular Ring Nebula is in a different space-time configuration. And this planetary nebula, it's cataloged as Messier 5-7, and it's in the northern constellation of Lyra. And these ring nebulas are formed when a shell of ionized gas is expelled into the surrounding interstellar medium by a giant red star, which was passing through the latter stages in its life, becoming a white dwarf. However, that's a normal natural formation of a ring nebula. Nebulas are typically formed by the ionizing gas of a dying star, but something happened in this case that was a little different. In Contact 238, it talks about the Ring Nebula being created by a king of wisdom. And Ptah refers to the Ring Nebula using the word J-H-W-H Mata. Ptah is one of Billy's contacts as well. And this occurred during Billy's trip in the mothership in 1975. Where he described this gigantic eye staring at him in space. And Ptah, the commander of the ship, referred to the Ring Nebula in somewhat of a negative way. He said in Contact Report 31, "It is for us a symbol of evil lust for power and domination, a symbol of hate, of destruction and human madness." This is a contrast to similar and natural formations. This is actually the work of man, he says. And in line 692 of Contact Report 238, it says, "Not only that an Ishwish, a king of wisdom, created the Ring Nebula in his megalomania, which has since been named the Eye of God, but his most distant descendants came to the earth and terrorize this world here." Remember, I told you we had disclosure too early here on the earth in our ancient past. And because of this, our religions are now these cargo cults, so to speak. We're waiting for certain individuals to come back, just like the people in the cargo cults in the Pacific Northwest. So these most distant descendants, again, finally came to the earth and terrorized our world. One of these terrorists was named Jehovah. Well, it wasn't pronounced with a J, probably. It probably was pronounced Yahovah, since there was no letter J until the 1600s or so. But that's, again, an entire show to talk about that. And so on, which at any rate, as a rough measure, happened essentially for the first time 389,000 years ago. That's when these people from Lyra Vega came to the Earth. And they were not such friendly people. They abused the Earth humans, naturally developing Earth humans, who were, by the way, dark-skinned. And they called them the Evas, those who had to bear, which is what the word means. And they were abused. They were killed and tortured, and other unspeakable things happened to them. So eventually these people from Lyra Vega were sentenced by their own people, who came in greater numbers and essentially said, hey, look, what you're doing is horrifically wrong. We're taking away your technology. You're going to die on the earth. You've already scarred these people for many, many generations, that your interactions have tormented these people and created scars in their subconscious, which will be inherited. So you're going to be part of the reincarnational patterns on this world. And they already had sex with the native earth people, so there was white skin genetic on the planet, and it started there. This is where part of the earth humans came from. So let me read what Askit has again to say about the earth humans' origin. Let me continue here. Since then, we again explored the expanses of our universe, and several centuries ago discovered this solar system, therewith this world, whose inhabitants show a very old connection with the Pleiaren. The Pleiaren are people like Ptah and Semyase and Svath, who we've talked about in other shows, as you name them, and which are involved also in the form of that which pertains to a mission. To be precise, the centuries by your time reckoning line up to about 33, during which we were again able to travel and explore your universe. So Askit's people, the Timmers, came back to our universe. Through our incessant explorations, we again found this world, as well as our original homeland. Their original homeland was in Lyra Vega, and the very distant descendants of those who, from the earliest time, were responsible ones who were relevant to the human life of this world, because a portion of the humans on the earth were not born here. Many are descendants of those who came out of the expanse of outer space, and indeed from the space that you name Lyra and Vega, with the Eye of God, the Ring Nebula. By the way, the Great Pyramid is 73,000 years old, according to Meyer information. And that's where the physical evidence for all this lies, in all of these constructions all over the earth, which are much, much more ancient, because we don't really know how to correctly date these things yet, in any sense. The people that came out of Lyra Vega, out of the Eye of God, the Ring Nebula. These territories lie, namely, the real and ultimate original homeland of later terrestrial human races. So just a few things to throw in here as we're slowly winding down here in the last few minutes, is that the Kepler, which is one of these space telescopes, have started to find all of these habitable planets in Lyra Vega. This is the first one. It was April 19th, 2013, and in a paper published today in Science, a team of astronomers announced they've identified two planets orbiting a star not too unlike our own in a system in the Lyra constellation about 1,200 light years away. There are two planets, which are water worlds. What makes this discovery special is the size of the planets. One is Kepler-62f, and the other one, which moves around its star in 267 days, it's about 40% bigger than the Earth. And this is the smallest one that's found in the habitable zone, according to a University of Washington professor of astronomy. Another one is Kepler-186f, and this was published on April 17, 2014. Planet hunters think they have evidence of a planet about Earth size that could have liquid water. which orbits another star, Kepler-186f, in the outermost world of a five-planet system, about three times closer to its star than the Earth. So, we're starting to at least see these planets that exist in our space-time configuration in Lyra Vega. But there's another space-time configuration where these worlds have populated civilizations, very, very, very advanced. And I want to talk just briefly in the closing moments about what the Meyer material says about Mars. We have the remnants on the Earth of five different kinds of human beings who are of extraterrestrial origin, one of which came from Mars. And Patah explained to Billy that Mars has large amounts of water. It used to in its rivers, which are now partially filled in by dust and volcanic ash. In addition, these rivers were gigantic, and 1,000-fold more water in these rivers than found in the largest rivers on Earth. On Mars, there are violently raging sandstorms, Patah explains, that cover the entire planet. And these enormous rivers of water and canals are covered with sand, dust, and volcanic ash. But these enormous rivers that are dozens and even hundreds of kilometers in diameter, and 1,000 kilometers in length, larger than the largest rivers on Earth, exist in Mars. And according to Contact 251, and I know some of the things in Contact 251 that Meyer information has said will not occur, but it says that in Contact 251 that there will be people from Earth that inhabit once again Mars. At one time, Mars had a whole civilization there that had built pyramids and very large structures, and these structures have since been pretty much completely destroyed, and all we have is I think rubble at this point. Now that's a whole different story and how that occurred and what that was all about, and we won't go there. But again, in the future, people from Earth will inhabit Mars, and there will actually be 13 colonies. I believe 13 colonies on Mars. I want to hope you've enjoyed this show. I certainly enjoyed bringing it to you. You're listening to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. Have a great weekend.